I believe we are live. I'm not entirely sure. We will find out, but we are recording, so we can always post it after the fact. And hopefully folks are able to watch if you're out there. So thank you and welcome to Creating the Future's Integrity Team meeting for June of 2023. I'm Hilda Gottlieb with Creating the Future, and it is wonderful to see all your smiling faces today. We've got some more people who are going to be joining in, and we will look forward to seeing them. And if you are out there in the universe watching us stream and have some thoughts, please tweet them on Twitter to the hashtag Creating the Future. It is the only place we will look. So, as much as we are loath to use Twitter these days, we are, that's where we still are, and until we can find an alternative. So welcome to everybody. Thank you for being patient with the tech issues. And let's just go around and do some quick, we'll do some sort of speed awesomes today. Let's share who you are, whose lands you are sitting on, and the importance of those people, and just something meaningful in your life. And Madeline, I want to know what's meaningful in your life. So I'm going to make you start.
I have a feeling, which sets me up perfectly. Hello, everyone. My name is Madeline. I use the pronoun she and her. I am joining you all from Adrian, Michigan, which is the lands of the Anishinaabe and Wyandot folks. Since like Hildy said, this is all about the people. A quick fun fact about that I learned recently is that the owl is often a sign of like death and mourning and that whole like journey to the afterlife. So not a great animal to include on like baby blankets and things like that if you're doing outreach and working with Indigenous folks. I guess something meaningful going on in my life is that I am transitioning into a new role. I've accepted a job at the University of Michigan, working with students there on mental health and substance use prevention and education. So I am very, very sad to be leaving all of the people that I love at my current role, but I'm excited to be trying something new that'll be a lot closer to home for me since I live in Ann Arbor. I'm going for like an hour commute to like a 2-mile commute, which is going to be really awesome. So I am, busy preparing for that big transition coming up.
Well, we are very excited for you. Very excited for you. And thank you for sharing that with us. Who wants to go next? What's going on in your world? Go ahead, Carl.
Hello, everyone. I'm Carl. I'm our European representative. I'm about 20 miles outside of London in the UK. We're currently, it is very hot, and we're just about to get some thunderstorm, which is quite unusual for here. And the good thing that's going on at the moment is that it's exam season in the household. My younger son is taking the exams that you need to do to get into university. So it's a good thing that he seems to be dealing with what I think is a fair amount of pressure, actually, quite well. So that's good, I think. Good to see you all.
Good to see you too. This is exciting. You're going to soon have both of them out of the house. I know. Who else? What's going on in your world?
I can go next. I'm Ron from Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the lands of the Mi'kmaq people. Congrats, Madeline. That's wonderful news. And Carl, I hate to tell you, but those kids might leave, but you never know when they'll be back. We're a combined family, and we've had one move back in a couple months ago, and she's out on her own now again. And another one who was traveling is back with us for an undetermined amount of time until his business kind of has some cash flow. So it was exciting times. Seeing them all get landed. And it was pretty tense around here the last few weeks. There was a fire in our immediate area here about I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, where a few homes were lost not far from us. And so everyone here was on high alert because these fires are so hard to gauge where they're going and how quickly they'll spread. But luckily, that's sort of, you know, it's funny, all the people in this area, they kind of almost are struck like during COVID again. It's a funny thing that happens to people when you are so tinder dry and you don't know where the next fire is popping up. And a lot of people still burning brush and so on, if you can believe it, even though it's, you know, up to a $25,000 fine and just really dangerous. But there you have it. So anyway, we're feeling, we've had a ton of rain lately and it's, you know, it's really helped. So we're feeling pretty good about that.
Well, we are just so glad that you and your family are safe, and yeah, glad to see you. Really, really happy to see you. Mark Friesen, what's going on in your world?
I was just going to say, I could keep the Canadian theme going. yeah, my name is Mark. I go by he, him pronouns. I'm coming to you all from the unceded Coast Salish territory in the lower mainland of British Columbia on the West Coast. So opposite Ron in the North. I'm director of community scholarship and advancement programs at a Columbia College that's a charity. And what's meaningful in my life right now is I've got three young kids, so, and they're all at home, so not leaving university. So Carl and Ron, I'll look forward to getting where you guys are one day. But what's meaningful right now is, as a charity, we support youth with backgrounds as refugees to access education. And a lot of the team that's supporting the resettlement of youth refugee backgrounds, not a lot, some of them have gone on to better different opportunities. So I'm in a recruitment stage, so kind of rebuilding that team. So it was... it was sad and bittersweet to have those team members go on to bigger and better things. But I'm kind of over the grieving stage and into the excitement stage to get some new folks engaged in the team to support that program. And excited to be here this morning. This should be great.
Well, and you know, that's what you all are about, is making opportunities for folks. And unfortunately, that frequently means they're gone. So yeah. Well, let's stick with the Canada theme. Elaine, you're up.
hi. So I am in Dufferin County, which is about an hour north of the city of Toronto in Ontario. And we sit on the lands of the Tayonetate, Attawandaron, Haudenosaunee, and Anishinaabe people. I am going to an event that is being hosted by the county with Dr. Pamela Pometer. And if anybody knows her, she's an Aboriginal person who is very vocal and stands up for what happened to Indigenous peoples in Canada. She actually terrifies me, and I've only seen her on TV. So to see her in person, I'm going to have to be, you know, open and just greet everything she has to share with us about what we don't know about what happened in Canada. Anyway, so I'm looking forward to that.
Wow. Yeah. Big stuff. Thank you. I'm looking forward to hearing what you learned. Yeah. Justin, how about you?
So I'm Justin Pollock, and I am on the land that sustained the Nacotchtank and Piscataway tribes, which is now Washington, D.C. and its surrounding areas. So I will share an excitement that is deeply connected to creating the future. So I will be transitioning to phone as I travel across the Chesapeake Bay to work with a board that I've been working with. And they are right at that point where they're trying to figure out, like, well, what do we do with what Justin did with us? Classic moment. You know, it's probably Carl a little bit like sending the kids off to university. Like, okay, now just go do it. That's there. Anyways, through the conversations I've been having with them and individuals, it was so clear how they were landing in various stages of the continuum of potential. And so I plan to use that tool to help sort of the whole board understand their own evolution and kind of where they are in relationship to this work, but also to just sort of recognize sort of that transition where they were waiting for the outside world to do something for them, the if only, and now they're really at that, you know, I'll try it, we'll do it. So just being able to use that as a basis to help them understand kind of where they are and how the artifacts that we have produced, how they can engage with them to sort of hold themselves in the different stages of the continuum and move them forward. So I thought you might like to hear that.
That's exciting. We do love to hear that. We do love to hear that. Dimitri.
I'm Dimitri Petropoulos. I am in Tucson, Arizona, along with Hildy. These are the traditional lands of the Tohono O'odham and Yaqui peoples. My sort of significant thing, and it's really interesting because you guys are talking about children and growing up and leaving. We do a Sunday morning call with my eldest, with our first grandchild. So we get about 45 minutes to an hour to watch her run around and talk. And what's really amazing is, one, watching the language progression, you know, that, you know, she's like 18 months old, 2 years old right now. You know, she went from like one word responses to now she's putting sentences together, but also the politeness, please, thank you, whatever. Even though she's still in that sort of two stage where she gets kind of grumpy and wants whatever she wants, she'll still get grumpy and say, please, you know, so that's kind of fun to watch. And just thinking about where she will be when she's going off to college you know, my eldest gets to deal with being possibly an empty nester after one, who knows? So that's my significant thing that you guys made me think about here this morning.
Yeah, Mito told us yesterday that she said, I love you, Daddy, for the first time. So yeah. I'm sure you're like all in that, Mark. Mark's got a three-year-old. Got older ones too, but got a three-year-old. So the I love you daddies are the big ones. Awesome. The big things, yeah. I am Hilde Gottlieb. I am in Tucson, Arizona, sitting next to Dimitri, the home, the traditional home of the Tohono O'odham people. And what is significant right now for what we learn from the O'odham people, I'm going to bring this up as a screen share. This is an arm of the saguaro cactus. And what you see, all those little brown things, the brown things are the remnants of flowers, and the green things are what are starting to be fruit. And the Tohono O'odham and people around here, the Hohokam before them, harvested, the summer is fruit harvesting from the saguaros. And these can be, you know, 15, 20 feet high. And so what they use is long sticks and poke. When that gets, those will all get bright red. And so in another month or so, those fruit will be bright red and really sweet. And traditionally what people did was that was a big part of food in the desert, is pulling those pushing them with sticks, having them fall into baskets, cooking with them, and just honoring the traditions that people lived and ate here in the desert. Tucson was actually the first UNESCO city of gastronomy in the US, because people have been continuously eating here they can document it for 4,000 years, that they have been growing things and nurturing themselves here for 4,000 years, long before we white folk came around and sucked all the water out of the ground. So my awesome is that I am leaving a week from tomorrow and going to spend an indefinite amount of time with my baby, who is getting rotator cuff surgery. So it's not really awesome, but I do get to be mom, and I get to take care of her, and I get to cook for her and answer her every whim until she gets really annoying, and then we'll both know. or I get really annoying, either one. But just preparing for that, and it's just feels really, really nice to be able to do so. So that's what's going on with me. And I hope Farah is close to joining us. Can you hear us, Farah? She is hopefully coming in, which will be awesome. Okay, big stuff today. Big stuff. We have been talking about what's next for Creating the Future for going on probably 2 years now. We spent a good chunk of last year, the majority of last year, engaging our community on what are the next steps for Creating the Future. We know that our mission has been to experiment with catalytic thinking in a variety of settings, and then to share what we've learned from those experiments. And in the first half of our mission, we have been very, very good at experimenting. I've got a list of something like 25 different experiments that we've done over this past 5-7 years, which is incredible. Because we were doing all of that, we did not take the time to document as we went. We recorded, we've got all the stuff, but we did not document and especially share. And so we asked our community last year, in what ways, what does sharing make possible? And in what ways do they want to see the sharing? How would it benefit them? And so what we've been talking about this year is, okay, how do we take all of that, pull it together, and define what's next? We right now have 3.5 years left on our 10-year mission to see how deeply we can accomplish our mission within that 10 years. And accomplish meaning really helping to make catalytic thinking ubiquitous, helping to make the questions of catalytic thinking the norm rather than, oh, that's an interesting question. Have it be, well, of course we ask that question. Of course, that's how we start. So one of the things I need to share with you all, and especially to Justin and Farah and Carl and Vu and Angie and Eli, who at the beginning of the year as a board set the pace for this. You all said, we got all the information from our community. What do we do now? And you all said, what if we just pause and give ourselves time to think? And I need to personally thank each and every one of you for that. What you gave me permission to do in that pause was to really think slowly, to wake up in the middle of the night in a massive panic attack, work through the panic attack, figure out, oh, okay, we can go in this direction, and to finally get myself back to sleep, and to a week later be able to look at it and go, that's not going to work. Of course, to wake up the next night and have another panic attack. But what you gave me was the permission to think and to talk with a lot of people to figure out what makes sense for what's next, rather than have a deadline and say, well, we got to do this by the X date, which would have been one hell of a panic attack. And just that permission to say, it's okay to be anxious about this. This is a big, huge step. It's okay to be thinking out loud about this. It's okay to be reaching out to a whole bunch of people and to not have to feel that that had to be done by, quote, the next board meeting or 2 weeks from now or what. That was a real gift. And it's a gift that you all gave to our community. It also was a gift to our community in that the responses that we got when we talked about that we were going to take a pause, that we were going to think slowly, were incredible. People just saying, I'm so excited for you. I wish I could do that. And we're so excited for you. So first off, to anybody who's watching, I so encourage you, if you're feeling pressure about something, your brain's not going to be working. You're going to be waking up in the middle of the night with an anxiety attack. Give yourselves permission, if you can, to slow down. So first, I just wanted to say thank you to you all for that. What seems to have come out of all of that, I'm very excited about, because it was collaborative. It was me talking to a whole bunch of people. As a board, we've decided a long time ago that this board does not make decisions. Decisions are made closest to the action, the activity. Of course, close to the activity is us right now in terms of what's next for this whole organization. But the first question I think we need to tackle is, how will we know if something is in integrity? If something is in integrity to our vision, our values, our mission, what questions do you all want to ask to make sure that what I'm about to share with you and have shared in a written form over the past couple of days, what questions do you want to have answered to know, is this in integrity to our vision? Is this in integrity to our mission? Is this in integrity to our values? And is it as simple as just asking those three questions? So go.
Well, I do think it is as simple as asking those questions. I mean, it is taking what you have shared with us and looking at that and just being able to see, you know, A, does the conceptual idea align with what we've said we value about people? And, I think the other question is, you know, one of the things that we are looking at integrity to was the integrity of actually the catalytic thinking process in development of the idea, whatever it was. And then I would say, you know, those are the two major ones. And then I think the minor one is looking to see whether it's communicating those. So it's a little bit more of the semantics and the wordsmithing without getting too detailed, but just making sure that the choice of words elicit what it is that we, you know, are trying to advance.
So what we're thinking about doing and how we communicate that? Okay. Anyone else?
Well, I'll just chime in quickly. I mean, you shared that written outline, and I mean, I'm focusing in on, like, some of this is around writers and publicists getting this out there. So a question I would pose along those lines related to that, those values, or what does inclusive communications look like? Like, what would that actually look like is a useful question related to what you've shared as a possibility.
Absolutely. It's good to see you, Farah. We're just getting started. We went around and did our awesomes, and we're just diving into how will we know if something is in integrity to our vision, our mission, our values, and to catalytic thinking. Before we dive into the meat of what it is, what are the questions that we want to ask about the meat? Yeah, Carl.
I don't know if this is a stupid thing to say or not, but this document that you shared, it doesn't have our values on, unless I can't see them. So you know, if we're sharing this with the outside world and we are asking that question all the time of, does it fit with our, not just our vision and our mission, but also our values, I think it will be helpful to have them on so that we can sort of check. And just on your point about the three questions, I think for me, in any period where you're going through lots of change, I think for me, the values, the most important thing, they always feel like the sort of the North Star. And because, you know, I mean, the mission and the vision will change, you know, I mean, they shouldn't be locked in aspic, to use an expression. They shouldn't be fixed forever. So for me, I'd be wanting to ask the question, I mean, are we holding our values all the time as whatever the changes are that we propose?
Yep. Yeah. And this is a draft. I mean, you know, it says draft. It is a draft. And it's a really good point, Carl, that the values aren't even mentioned. They're mentioned, but they're not enumerated. Yeah. So it seems like we're getting into a little bit of the juice of the how. So let me dive in with the questions that we've talked about so far. Oops, let me turn off my phone. No. Okay, sorry. For those who have not had a chance to look at the draft, I will sort of go over it very, very quickly. If our vision, at least in the, if our vision is, and our community really articulated this, a mindset shift from reacting to what's wrong to creating what's possible, to reacting to the worst in each other, rather than bringing out the best in each other, a shift from me, mine, to sharing what we have. If that is our vision, a world that works for everyone because we are asking those questions. And the near-term vision is that catalytic thinking be ubiquitous, and that be part of the mission that we want to accomplish, that it is ubiquitous. And again, if a big part of our mission is to document and share what we've learned about catalytic thinking, the things that our community said were important in terms of the conditions to lead to it being ubiquitous are that people have places to learn catalytic thinking. They have places where they can come together with other practitioners and learn together, and that they're constantly inspired to experiment. And to me, I see the inspiration to experiment as part of both those other things, part of coming together with others. I know that from our own communities of practice and the cohorts that we've had, that you all are inspiring each other and inspiring each other to try things, and trying things is experimenting. One of the things that has popped up in our conversations for years now is the model of Alcoholics Anonymous. And without getting into the actual recovery model of AA, what we've talked about is the fact that AA is a completely decentralized, it's a completely decentralized thing. There is no president of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you go to their website, you'll find resources, you'll find questions and supports, but stuff that you can use to start your own group. And the thing that makes AA so powerful in that decentralized model is that AA meets people where they physically are, where they already are. So if you're in church, if you're at synagogue, if you're in a mosque, if you are in a large workplace, if you're in community, you ask three people, where can I find an AA meeting? And you'll get 12 meetings. They are physically where people are. And as we've talked about that whole decentralized model, we also know that if people have to come to Creating the Future to learn and convene, that doesn't make it ubiquitous. What makes something ubiquitous is it's out there. And so what we're looking at is that as a model. If people want to learn, they can learn it anywhere. That any place that is teaching anything that catalytic thinking can be part of, whether it is a university class on creating change or on nonprofit management or on social enterprise, or in business instead of strategic planning. Here's an alternative way of planning. Here's an alternative way of thinking. Infuse it into what people are learning in high schools, in universities, just in terms of a different way of thinking about things. Infuse it into how consultants, and it doesn't matter if they're business consultants or nonprofit consultants, how consultants are working and what they're teaching. So that people can learn catalytic thinking where they're already learning. Mark has done a great job. He is in the middle of doing more of that at Columbia College, where he's infusing catalytic thinking into a program that he's doing. Angie infused catalytic thinking into her fundraising class. So it's not because Mark's going to teach a class on catalytic thinking, but because it's infused into what he's already doing and teaching it through that. Angie's not teaching a class in catalytic thinking. She's teaching fundraising. And so just the ability to learn it where you are. And the same thing with people being able to connect with other people, connect with other practitioners, create communities of practice where people already are. And Elaine, you're starting to talk about that. We're talking about that with several other groups right now to help folks form communities of practice where they already are, eventually with the goal that all of those conveners can be in a community of practice and help seed more communities. So again, having people be able to access catalytic thinking where they are and not requiring creating the future, to me, the biggest part of making this ubiquitous is that it not require creating the future. And that's the AA model, is it doesn't require somebody in some ivory tower someplace saying, oh yeah, we've changed how this works. No, it is owned by everybody. The rest of what I shared with y'all is stuff that we were thinking about that needs to be in place to create that. So somebody needs to write some stuff. Somebody needs to share the stuff. Somebody needs to, but the big piece that I want to make sure that we're all aligned behind is this model of, it's a collective enoughness model. It's the diaper, as you all used to call it, the diaper bank model. Where we shared all of the functions, any function that the diaper bank had to do, we asked, is somebody already doing this? Let's share with them. We don't need a warehouse. We don't need caseworkers. We don't need, that was that model. It's the same thing. We don't need faculty to teach this. There's already a million people out there teaching stuff. We don't need conveners. There's already a million people out there convening people. And just using that model of sharing so that we can make this ubiquitous. So when it comes to, and if I left anything out that you saw in what I shared with y'all, please, or what I've had conversations with some of you about this. When it comes to asking that question of, is this in alignment with catalytic thinking and with our vision, our mission, and especially our values? What questions do you have, or does it feel aligned? Does it feel not aligned? I open the floor. And I thank you for letting me babble on about this.
So it's funny, Hildy, because I was just at an Ontario Alliance for Healthier Communities conference. And I was sitting beside a total stranger and we were talking and the presentation happened. And then she said, yeah, so, you know, I'm having trouble in my own org. I'm new there. She said, so I think I need to do a SWOT. And I went, well, you could. I said, but you can also explore. And I wrote down creating the future, Hildy Gottlieb, and I put here catalytic thinking. I said, you could explore that. That would give you a different opportunity and a different way to ask questions and work with your new team. So that's how it's going to happen. So how do you make more of that happen? And you never know if that person's going to take that invitation and do anything with it. But my hope is that they will. So it's being able to find somebody who is curious about something different and going, and then inviting them to try something different. So that was one tiny little thing. So I will do that everywhere I go.
Anyone else? Does this feel like it is in alignment? Yeah, Justin.
So it certainly feels like everything that's here is in alignment. I think there are a couple of things that perhaps need to be more explicit, because I feel like they're an assumption that's underneath it, but we're not being clear about. So when I look at those, the conditions for success around learning catalytic thinking, just again, sort of the way it's written seems to put an emphasis on the institutional learning structures. And I think, you know, there is the assumption that we've always had, which is anyone should be able to, you know, when we say, you know, being able to access it from wherever you are learning, to make sure we're explicit that that may be people who are just exploring. And just as Elaine was saying, that, you know, you might mention it to someone. And so I think part of this is really recognizing that that library is just, it just reads a little heavy towards the practitioner of a teacher, not necessarily from the learner side of being able to say, you know, that we have, I don't know that that necessarily changes the approach. I just think it's making sure that if this is a guiding principle, that we come back to anybody can learn catalytic thinking without having to be in high school or a university class or at a capacity building entity that's there. I still think having, you know, the idea of co-opting those structures, as, you know, Mark does, and, you know, I think we all do, I think is good to have in here, that's there. So I think that's, and I think it's captured, you know, when we talk about creating classes and helpful documents, but we just might want to make sure that that's a piece. And then the only thing, and I have to say, I'm not sure how much of this is my own filter versus what has developed in partnership of working with Creating the Future, but thinking about the language around outcomes as the verb of people actually doing the behavior. And so the only reason, and this is a semantics piece, when I see must be able to, I understand that principle, but when I think about how we would judge it, we would actually, people are learning wherever they are already learning. You know, now in order for that to happen, the resources must be available to them. that's there. But it was just one of those things that it felt like it, I guess, Hilde, it almost felt like should language. And I think we can just change that so it doesn't feel like it's prescriptive or.
Yeah, I like the phrasing of will be able to learn rather than must be able to learn.
Yeah, or just are learning. Like that's the goal, is, you know, the conditions for success are people are learning, people are connecting, people are inspired. And then there is a subset of conditions obviously behind that. But for me, it feels like for Creating the Future, we would want to lead with that observable, beneficial, good for humanity language.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Yeah, it's been interesting to wordsmith this as a document to try and fit it on one page. Yeah.
So I'm eliminating words for you then.
You're doing great. You're doing absolutely great, yeah. Yeah, because the most exciting thing that happened last week was we got it from 10-point type to 11-point type. other thoughts? How does this as an approach feel?
From my point of view, I mean, I like this approach. It seems very congruent with everything. the but in it for me is simply how do you monitor or check in on what people are doing? If you want people to try on their own, you don't really know if it's catalytic thinking that's working or not working, or if it's their approach to it. So how do you measure? What's the system? Because this is all about systems that lead you to success, right?
I guess my immediate question to that is, do we measure? And who's we? Those are the questions that pop for me, because how do we measure is a organization-centric thing, is we've got to prove that this thing, we know this stuff works. We know that if you change just one of these questions, one question, that it will change a conversation and can change a direction. Again, I'm not sure that we will want, and that becomes an integrity question of, do we want to quote measure? Do we want to, what is the point of measuring and controlling? And again, if we're looking at the Alcoholics Anonymous model, do we know that every AA meeting is going according to ding, 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 ding? No, we don't. And is that okay? But it's definitely a question that we will want to tackle over the next year or so. Do we want to, and I'll use the word measure, do we want to evaluate? I think is a really important question, Ron, a really important question. And if so, who's we? Yeah.
I would also add, what do we want to evaluate? And I think it's really important that, I'm thinking about distribution of information. All of this talks about, the information. Well, we want to have this be widely available to people so that they can on their own do whatever they want. Do we know that? And would it change our efforts? Not in terms of what people are learning, but just the availability of it. So I'm just sort of thinking about that as a issue.
Yeah. I think it's a really, really good question. And I'm really glad you raised it, Ron. I'm really glad you raised it, because I think it's something that we're going to want to ask. And as we go out looking for funding of this, which one of the exciting things about it is, this is really a project. This is not funding to continue for the next 20 years because we're going to do this and this is what we're going to be and blah, blah. This is a short term. We have to get this done, this done, this done. But as we go out looking for funding, one of the questions people are going to ask is about measurement and evaluation. And I think it's going to be really important that we ask the question and answer it. Do we intend to measure? Do we intend to evaluate? And definitely using catalytic thinking to address that. So thank you for that, Ron. Yeah, Mark.
No, Farah, you go. Okay. This is, I'm trying to avoid getting into the how, but I mean, yeah, if I think of my reaction to that question, I would not be just personally interested in, does catalytic thinking work? I mean, because any of us who've practiced it have seen the power. But if I look at the stuff on here, Hildy, and I think, okay, what would measurement make possible in the context of this? It would give some knowledge around, okay, there's reference to creating classes and helpful documents. I'd be interested to know, does someone in a community of practice using these classes who's, if I think ahead, never actually spoken to Hildy, are they able to apply catalytic thinking? Like, that'd be an interesting measurement to know, someone who's never spoken with Dimitri Hildy uses this stuff, successfully uses catalytic thinking or something. Like, that would be an interesting kind of measure that gets into, well, what this make possible is knowing the stuff that you're doing as part of this effort is equipping decentralized access, put it that way, to just to catalytic thinking.
Yeah, it's good. That's good. That's going to be a whole nother conversation and a good one. Not that any of our conversations are not good ones.
And sorry, just while I'm unmuted, just going back, flipping to reference to the values. And yeah, thank you for posting that, Justin. But I noticed that one of the values of creating future is folks that are historically excluded are centered. And so my question around value is, okay, if it's a decentralized effort to reflect as part of this, who is being centered? And ideally, if I use Elaine's example, ideally the people being centered may be folks who've not historically used it, folks within communities, you know, so some kind of question around that is who's included and who is being centered as this rolls out.
Yeah, that's going to be huge. It's going to have to be huge. Catalytic thinking has, from what I know, been primarily introduced by people who are white into relatively white spaces. It's not to say that we have not had people of color throughout our faculty, throughout our classes, but it has not been predominant and it has not been 50-50. And so that's going to be a big part of it. It's going to have to be. Anyone else in terms of does this feel like a direction to move forward in? Does this feel aligned with our vision, our mission, our values? To move forward. Yeah, Justin.
I wanted to pause actually first. I sort of raised my hand because Farah, I wanted to make sure if you had a comment that you got it in there.
Thank you. I don't know that it's, I was just wanting to pull apart a little bit the difference between measuring something and quality assurance of something. So I think that making sure that materials that are going out that others might pick up and use to inform their catalytic thinking, I don't see that as like a monitoring or evaluation function so much as a QA function, and those are slightly different. So I do think it's worth having the conversation on what does QA look like or should look like? And similarly, and I know we've had this conversation in the past as well, is QA from the lens of, are we making sure that these resources are being developed and disseminated in a, like, we will use our skills for good, not evil lens? Thank you, Justin.
Well, no, I really appreciate that because that's, you put in words sort of that quality assessment component that was my reaction, which was, do we want to add something in here about that feedback component somehow, which is, you know, built into this that those, you know, all of the people involved feel that they have the ability to contribute to interpreting and reinterpreting and, you know, being able to say, I can't learn from this, like this isn't working for me. And again, it doesn't quite get to the assessment, but what it is building in, which I think is so important, and I think it may address some of what Mark's raising and certainly what Farah is raising, is making sure that we identify that one of the conditions for success is the feedback loop, that those who are engaging with catalytic thinking have the ability to give feedback, influence the ongoing, you know, the library, the resources, so that it really is a there's the Stone Soup Collective enoughness. So I guess part of it is like, now I'm looking at it and going, oh yeah, you could read this to be like, well, only the writers get to produce material, as opposed to a more sort of wiki model So it might even just be going back to that core piece of, well, who cares about this? And in what way are they able to contribute to the formation and reformation of the structures and systems? Again, may not necessarily be at the root of the catalytic thinking framework, although we always appreciate push and pull on that. But just being able to say, this is meant to be an evolutionary ecosystem.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I'm really excited about is the stone soup in the all of these sections that say this will require writers, publicists, et cetera, engagement people. I'm excited to have our community be part of that, to have them be the ones who are writing and contributing and et cetera. Is to open the door. It has been interesting. A couple of the people that I have shared this my thinking with have immediately said, "Can I help?" Not how can I help, but can I help? Can I be part of it? So there's something that's resonating. You know, can I write? I've had two people ask. I've had one person ask, can I write and can I be involved in the communications, the publicist part, the engagement part? I've had somebody else say, I'm a writer, can I write? I mean, that's exciting.
I'm also, these are all good points. it makes me think, you know, there's been some debate over what platform is best to experiment with when people are, you know, we looked at the Facebook group, seemed quite right, and so on. But I'm just wondering if one of the roles of this organization is going to be to host some part of that feedback mechanism so that you can even evaluate how do you know if it's ubiquitous unless you track it somehow or unless you're in the game somehow. Happenstance probably isn't going to give you enough comfort to know how you're doing on that. And the same as how do we know what if people are using these questions, it's the same thing. You know, so
yeah,
it just makes me wonder what the system is, because we're all about systems that lead to success, and I just wonder how that gets rolled out.
Yeah, it's a good point. Anything else that is occurring to you as you look at this, and just the question of is this approach in alignment? And what concerns do you have about it might not be in alignment? And I'll tell you, my various panic attacks over the past several months have been at every point realizing, oh, that's not in alignment. That doesn't fit. That push and pull.
I mean, I feel like I've talked a lot, but I haven't been at any of your board meetings for quite some time. And so have not been privy to a lot of the conversations around the values and thinking of this as an integrity board. But my response to Hilde is this in alignment? So many of the values of the Creating Future, inclusion, centering folks who are not typically included, as I read through all of them, like a key element of people addressing systems change or being included in spaces where they're not included, fighting oppression, fighting really tough battles that are going on in people's lives, is having some community of support. And so everything in here that reinforces meet people where they are reinforces that reality of so many tough issues like climate change or whatever it is. One thing that comes up again and again and again is people needing a community where they have relationships and they have support. And so to the extent that this reinforces those communities where they are, I think it's totally in line with the values is my probably very biased, but assessment is that piece especially meets that key element of social change, social innovation, social justice of communities needing to support one another. Yeah. So if it reinforces that, then yes.
Yeah, that raises a really interesting different way of encouraging building those communities. So it could be around issues. It could be around circumstances. It could be around, yeah, that's really, really.
Well, thinking of that, how does AA ensure that the organization continues locally when they don't have a central function?
I first of all, my answer is I have no personal experience with AA, so I don't know. But my guess is that if there is a group, because it's not a local organization, it's a group. And Farah's noting that they do have a central office with paid staff, so you know more about it than I do. Can you chime in a little bit?
Yeah, I'd looked this up a couple of months ago because I know we were looking at it as a model. So they have both a central office and regional offices to kind of support local organizing in places that have a lot of chapters. And the central office maintains the website, gets the resources out, does quality assurance. You know, if you're starting up a new chapter or meeting and don't know what to do, there are people that you call who aren't just like, oh, I went to a meeting once 20 years ago. Sure, let me tell you, you know, like there are actual steps and quality assurance pieces to it. And alongside that, and I don't think it's necessarily bad to consider, there are a lot of now, especially kind of growing discussions around whether the model is too rigid. Does it actually create inclusive spaces? What are some of the, and this is not my area at all, so I don't know kind of what the right conversations around it are, but I'm always just kind of curious on like, are we looking at the full picture of what is happening at an organization or, you know, kind of like holding it up to a pedestal that isn't actually replicable. As I understood the history, it always has had paid staff. And so the decentralizing function came about after it became so large that it didn't need the quality assurance piece anymore. It didn't organically spring up and then the 12 steps came together, right? Like they had a very clear thing and then it became decentralized.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's really important.
Yeah. And to me, it's interesting that there is conversation around, is it too rigid? Because again, this whole thing, you know, Justin added earlier, is it in alignment to our vision, mission, and values and to catalytic thinking? This came through catalytic thinking. This came through if it is to be ubiquitous, if it's to be everywhere, not as an organization, but as a way of thinking and asking questions. If that methodology is to be less a methodology and more just the way we are with each other, what does that actually take? What needs to be in place? And what was interesting, asking it over and over and over again, both on the whiteboard back here and with lots of people in consultation, the one thing that was not on the list for something to be ubiquitous for a way of thinking to be ubiquitous was it needs an organization. It was the one thing that nobody mentioned. It needs an organization for something to be ubiquitous. And you know, I think about the power of what happened with Mothers Against Drunk Driving. They didn't start the movement, and they're not the center of the movement, but yes, did they push for legislation? Yes, did they make a huge splash and make a big initial thing? Yes, absolutely. But there are entire generations that just assume somebody's going to be a designated driver. And in part, it's because of the law, and in part, it's not because of the law. It has become part of the culture. And it's not because there's a Mothers Against Drunk Driving chapter in a community. But when kids now, it's easily three generations. I think my generation is the last generation that did not have that, where it's just assumed. When I was growing up, a designated driver wasn't a thing. I mean, it literally did not exist. And it's not, it doesn't exist. Culture doesn't shift because an organization exists. And it was just fascinating to me that in all the conversations I had, it was the one condition for success I never heard. It needs an organization. It needs a centralized, fill in the blank. And so for my question would be, okay, if that's the case, then what does it take to assure quality? What does it take to, and does it need to assure quality? So that's probably another question. And I think that's all part of the monitoring question.
I mean, I do think that one of the reasons why the notion of a designated driver has caught on is that everyone calls it a designated driver, right? I'm not sitting here being like, let me make up my own term. And so while we may not see the organizing that went into convincing hundreds of millions of people to use a specific term with a specific abbreviation, it either did or it really was just a cultural flashpoint, right? Like those two things do happen, but I do think sometimes we underestimate the value of the humans behind cultural flashpoints. And it's not, I think we're asking like, do you need an organization? And my question behind that is always, what is the unseen human labor that we don't know that we need, but does hold the glue together? And organization, like at every office I've worked with, there is like an office operations admin team that you almost, if they are doing their job well, it's almost like you don't even know that they're doing it. But the second they're not, you're like, where are the pens? And you're like, no, it actually does require a human to remember that, like, you have to replace the supplies and like do these, right? So there's a caretaking function. And we live in a society that consistently asks us to assume that caretaking happens by magic. And it doesn't.
Right. Yeah. And what you're talking about initially in terms of the designated driver, it started with a something that combusted. We had that. We are that. We've been that. So I think what we're at the transition. We're at the transition. Okay, we've lit a spark. What turns that spark into a fire?
Just selfishly, what Farah just said, language, that term, designated driver. So I think that's fascinating. And then I love, reframe what you put, Farah, like who are the caretakers, I think. Who would be the caretakers? Because it's been this group, who would be the caretakers on an ongoing basis. I had a prior commitment that I tried really hard getting out of, and I'm not being successful. So my thanks and appreciation, loving this conversation, and just excited to see where this goes next. Thank you, Hildy.
Thank you for being here, Mark. Thank you. What I'm gathering from the conversation is that with some significant additions to the conversation regarding quality control and quality assurance, adding a little bit of this into this and that into a document, but really looking at a couple of big things in terms of ensuring there's feedback loops, ensuring that there's mechanisms for people to access feedback loops, ensuring that we have mechanisms for ensuring. It feels like what I'm hearing is this is an approach that is in integrity to our vision, our mission, our values, and to catalytic thinking, and that we can move forward in this direction. Is that what I'm hearing?
I think so, Hildy. And, you know, I mean, if I may be so bold as to say, I don't think a lack of integrity has ever been our problem.
Well, and I appreciate that, but I did not want to make a major step without coming together and making sure that we are in alignment with our integrity. So thank you, Carl. Anyone else? Does this feel like this is in integrity given everything that we've talked about and issues to continue to discuss? Justin, any thoughts? And if you are talking, we can't hear you. Oh, technology. This has been a techie day, isn't it? All right. I'm going to ask you all for reflections. I think we have really covered this, and I really, really, really appreciate the conversation. What is standing out to you from our conversation today? Yeah, Carl.
I think this is a good document. I think we share similar ideas about where we want to go. And it still feels scary, the idea that, you know, you will not be at the center of things, to be very blunt. This feels like we've had sort of conversations like this before, and they're very good. I think sometimes practically we I don't know if we're all too scared to move on and sort of think about how do we operationalize what you said here. I don't know if that's helpful or not, but the starting point is that you've written a clear document here. I think, you mean, certainly, you know, when I think back to the conversations that we had about what our community said is important to them, that those three points resonate. Yeah. So I don't have any problem with the integrity of this in terms of what we do. I think it's about the how. And I know that's not the purpose of today's question. I just thought I'd say that.
Thank you. Thank you. What else is standing out to y'all?
I think I'll go next because Carl kind of clarified my conundrum. I guess I'm just programmed, you know, to go to the how. And so it's difficult for me to stay above that. But, it, you know, you know, I guess what stands out to me is, you know, Hilda, you've been very successful over the decades in everything you've done. And Dimitri, you're part of that, I know. And yeah, I guess I'll just, it just makes me, when you're reflecting in the meeting, do we need an organization? I'm just, I would be a bit at a loss if you and Dimitri weren't sort of organizing the whole thing. Where would it go? You know, that it kind of, those are the questions that kind of come to the forefront with me. So yeah, I like the document. You know, I've been a supporter of yours for a long time, Hildy, and everything you've done. So I've got a lot of faith and trust, but it doesn't make it any less difficult to be part of this conversation and to try to make a meaningful contribution, because it's a big, big project. Ubiquitous is a big word, you know, is a, you know, so yeah, that's where I'm coming from.
Thank you, Ron. What else is standing out to y'all?
This is Justin. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Sorry, there was some phone integration issues there. So I think it's both a reflection and just going back to when you had asked if I had a thought, you know, agreeing with Carl in terms of that question of integrity. But I did want to note that I do feel in looking at this document that it is representative of what people were saying in the conversations we had. So in that sense of, you know, not just the integrity of like, are we doing a good thing, but really saying we went out, we listened to those who, you know, in the immediate are those most affected by this decision. And this represents what we were hearing from them. So I just wanted to, you know, acknowledge that sort of in that integrity role that's there. I think, you know, in response to Ron, what you're raising, I think this is the big transition moment of what does a structure look like that is not dependent on a personality or charisma. And I do think that, you know, the way in which this document is framed and that it is giving a lot of room to allow that collective enoughness to fill space.
Awesome. Thank you.
That's all.
Thank you, Justin. I'm glad we got you. I'm glad we hooked in there. Elaine, Farah, Dimitri, any reflections? What is standing out to you from our conversation?
Okay. I would just quickly add, I agree with Carl that this
Farah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, can you hear me? I was just gonna say, I wanted to second what Carl said, that this feels like it is in integrity with the organization. And obviously there are pieces to figure out, but the overall vision, it feels like it's on the right track.
Awesome, thank you. Dimitri?
Obviously in agreement on all of that. I also was thinking a lot about what you, Farah, had mentioned, and the whole idea of what does a decentralized organization look like. And, you know, we were looking at the AA model. Hilda, you mentioned MAD. And the thought that comes to mind to this conversation is champions. All of those have champions. And I'm just sort of thinking about the integrity of the model and having people who champion that. And, you know, Carl, when you're raising your sort of uncertainty about what this looks like, you know, down the line without Hildy and you know, myself, I'm just thinking about, you know, you're a champion on this, and there are many others. So I have great confidence in this because of that. It's not just suddenly, here's a great idea, go do it. But there's people out there who can really speak to it and share their successes and their concerns in a way that it does a lot. So yes, that is part of the integrity, and I totally agree with that.
Speaking of champions, Elaine.
Well, Dimitri, you took the words right out of my mouth, because the whole time I was sitting here listening, I was thinking about the examples, especially of, the designated driver. And it is because every single person has taken accountability and responsibility to be a champion of eliminating drunk driving. And so that's the magic. And making catalytic thinking accessible to every single person who has the curiosity to approach things, asking different questions, I think is key to that. And just to say, when you say Hildy's not going to be there anymore, I don't know what that means, but Hildy's always going to be there. I'm sorry. So Hildy may not be at the center, but Hildy is still central to what this is. Just like the mad moms are not at the center making everything happen. They make some things happen. They are still central to fostering the belief, if you will. I think in that you are still going to be central, because it's your collective work in that sense that's going to be there as a living, breathing thing. And so then everybody else, again, going back to what you said, Dimitri, becomes a champion of this new way of thinking, you know? And then the whole, what will it take to make this possible? Wow, that's a whole different story. That's big.
Thank you. And thank you for being a champion. Mm-hmm. The thing that's standing out to me, several things are standing out to me. First of all, I mentioned it at the beginning, I've been thinking it through the entire meeting. I have such deep gratitude for this group, for the people who come and go out of and into this group, for this conversation. So that's number one. And grateful for the permission and encouragement for slow time to think. The other thing that occurs to me, and it's not just because I'm getting older, but it's a deep part of my faith, is that none of us lasts forever and none of us knows when that moment is. And a big part of my personal motivation is the question, if something were to happen to me tomorrow, what happens to this way of thinking? What happens to this framework? What happens to this thing that we have all experienced, everyone in this room has experienced, is powerful? That's my motivation, my personal motivation, is I never know when I wake up in the morning, is this my last day? Is this my last minute? And none of us, if we're very honest with ourselves, knows that. Because of my practice, because of my faith, I have ingrained that into my life, that everything I do, I try to be mindful of the fact that there might not be a tomorrow for me. There'll be a tomorrow for the world. There'll be a tomorrow for everyone else. But what does that mean for the work that I have done? And I appreciate Carl and Ron. I appreciate your sentiments and Justin. And it is really, really important to me that whatever we do lives beyond me, because I am just as mortal as everybody else. And it does nobody any good if I'm the center of the universe for this. So I appreciate the sentiment. I appreciate that I have been the driving force. But I am really excited about creating systems and mechanisms that don't rely on me, Yeah. So, so I'm really grateful for the conversation and grateful for all of you and excited for what's next and who knows what the next conversation is going to be. Although I do have a sense of what it is because you all talked about it. So we've set the path, and over the next couple of months, we'll get back together with this. And I promise next time I'll give you more notice. I suddenly realized that because I was leaving town and I had no idea how long I was going to be in LA, that we needed to have a meeting. So I really appreciate y'all being able to jam in here, and have a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you all.
Bye, everyone.
See you, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you for letting me participate with you.
Thanks, everyone.